Sabbath, so that makes it really special. We'll be going right into Pentecost at sunset tonight. How special is that? Well, Franz Schubert, I was wondering if it's Schubert's or Schubert. I'm not. Symphony number 8 in B minor is commonly known as the Unfinished Symphony. I don't know if you've heard it, but it was started in 1822, and it was left off with only two movements created, well known to be complete. And that's kind of odd because Schubert lived another 6 years, so why didn't he finish it? Well, forget about Franz Schubert's. I've done my own unfinished symphony in D major. Here it is so far. I've got the note D to start out. I'm just teasing you, but it's kind of unusual that somebody had an unfinished symphony, you know, and became famous for it. Well, today we're not going to talk so much about unfinished symphony, but we're going to talk about the unfinished sermon. And I'll tease you a little bit there. It's not my unfinished sermon. It's someone else's. Well, here's the story. Started in 1974 in homiletics class at Ambassador College, my senior year in 1974. And the closest thing we came to actually giving a sermon was to have to create an introduction for one. You didn't have to do the whole sermon, the whole outline. You just had to have an introduction. But, you know, to do that, you kind of have to have the whole sermon in mind. Well, I don't even remember the one that I came up with, so I'll call it the Should Be Forgotten sermon, because I can't even remember what it was. But my friend there, Sandy Beatty, had an idea and presented it in his sermon for the class that has stuck with me all of these 38 years. That's how something like that can intrigue you. And I've been, you know, all this time thinking someday somebody should finish that sermon that Sandy Beatty had an idea for. Well, we're all familiar with the Proverbs 31 woman. And I don't know how many, if you did receive Mr. Ashley's email, you saw that Mr. Romer had a tribute to his wife there. I've got it out. He said, "Can anyone say Proverbs 31, virtuous woman, dedicated daughter of God, super wife, great mother, committed servant to God's people wherever we have served, helpful neighbor, 4 children, 7 wonderful grandchildren. I mean, that was a nice little statement that Mr. Romer wrote about his wife, Carol. And I think, you know, most of us could write something nice like that about our wives. Just because I had this idea about the Proverbs 31 woman on my mind, I gave my wife a card and said, you know, who can find a virtuous woman? And then she opened it up and it says, finders keepers. Because I'm grateful to have found one, and I hope you are too. Well, it's one of the interesting thing about Proverbs 31 is it's one of the acrostics in the Bible. You remember Scott Lockwood just a short time ago when he did his sermon about the Book of Lamentations, talked about how that's built around acrostics. You have Psalm 119 about the perfect law of God is an acrostic. And that's where you have the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph. And then, so in this verse, who can find a virtuous wife, will start with the A in Hebrew. And I think it's probably verse 11 that starts with the B for, Beth, I think. And so on. It goes through all 21 letters of the Hebrew alphabet and becomes an acrostic. And so that's why this chapter is often called the perfect woman. And Psalm 119, the perfect law, and, you know, so on. Commentaries say that the intended audience was not actually young women. I mean, you kind of, your first thought is, this is what my daughter Jessica should read about how to be the perfect woman. Or you think, you know, a woman should read this. She'll want to know how to be the perfect woman. But actually, the commentaries point out that the book of Proverbs is geared toward the young man. It always says, here's for the young man to receive wisdom and discretion and all this. So this was actually directed directly for the young man that wants to find a virtuous woman. Here's what to look for. And they argue back and forth about whether King Lemuel in verse 1 of chapter 31 there, is he Solomon? Is the mother Bathsheba? And, you know, it goes round and around, but it seems like they generally tend to agree on that. If it was King Solomon, boy, that guy needed help to find a virtuous wife. He had 300 of them and he couldn't find one. And he had the 700 concubines, which is probably what messed him up from finding the one. And, you know, the book of Song of Solomon, I've heard some real interesting sermons about what that book is about. And most of the ministers tend to agree that it was probably about that one gal that Solomon actually recognized as being that virtuous woman he wanted. And she was in love with the other man. So, poor guy, poor Solomon, but anyways, Proverbs 31 just have wonderful things to tell us. And we know the church of God is characterized as a woman. The church is characterized as a woman. And we know that Jesus Christ is looking for the perfect woman to marry. His church to become his bride at his return. So, for example, Ephesians 5:27. You may as well keep Proverbs 31 open because that's what we're mainly at today, but let's go to Ephesians 5 verse 27. And this is where it says that he, Christ, might present her, the church, to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. And he's not using granny's home spot remover or, you know, aloe vera, you know, 100% something with aloe vera or hasselberries or acai berries or whatever it is. This is thanks to the Holy Spirit, of course, which is what we're picturing for Pentecost. So this is a nice tie-in with that. Revelation 19, verses 7 to 8. You can look over there real quick. Revelation 19, 7 to 8. Says, let us be glad and rejoice and give him, God, glory. For the marriage of the Lamb has come. His wife has made herself ready. She is ready. When the time for the marriage comes, she is ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright. For the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. And his bride, the church, will be ready for that marriage. Even in Proverbs 31 here, verse 22, it says, she makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. And the purple, of course, can tie in with royalty. And so this woman in Proverbs 31, actually in the New King James, it says, verse 10, who can find a virtuous wife? Because this woman in chapter 31 is obviously married. So I guess it's the King James says, who can find a virtuous woman? New King James says, who can find a virtuous wife? And they're both about the same. Tomorrow at Pentecost, you know, we're going to celebrate the forming of the New Testament church. And we look forward to the marriage to the Lamb, of course. And the book of Ruth was actually read at Pentecost, and it pictures the marriage of church to Christ by the marriage of Ruth to Boaz. There's those types in there. I know that probably we men have a harder time relating to the idea of being the bride of Christ than the ladies would. I think we can all relate to being engaged. So I often pray, you know, God help me to be engaged, actively engaged in becoming married to Christ. And I like play on words, so I always ask God to groom me to be the bride of Christ. You know, so I mean, there's things we can do to help us to relate to it a little better, maybe. The Expositor's Bible Commentary says that the poem referring to this, Proverbs 31, certainly presents a pattern for women who want to develop a life of wisdom. But its lessons are for both men and women. Both men and women. And the Matthew Henry Concise Commentary says, this passage is to be applied to individuals, but may it not also be applied to the Church of God, which is described as a virtuous spouse. God, by His grace, has formed a church of true believers to possess all of the excellencies here described. So actually, this Matthew Henry came up with the same idea that my friend Sandy Beatty had 38 years ago. Proverbs 31 is not just about the perfect woman. It's not just about the perfect wife. It's also about the perfect church of God, which includes all of us, men and women. So, there you go. I'm done. There's the introduction. Now you can all sit like I did for 30 years, right? And go do a sermon on that someday. Now, I'm going to go ahead and take you through one now and finish off Sandy Beatty's idea from 38 years ago. So let's look, I think, first of all, at the word virtuous in verse 10. The word is actually H-A-Y-I-L. That could be high yield. I'm not sure because I don't know Hebrew. But probably the most common rendering of that is not virtuous, but actually strength. And over in verse 3, it says, do not give your strength to women. And that was the same Hebrew word, hayil. Matthew Henry says this is the same word that's used in the character of good judges. So over in Exodus 18, verse 20, it said to search out able men. So the word able is also that same word. Proverbs 31:25 says that this perfect wife is clothed with strength and honor. Strength and honor are her clothing. So strength of character is what we're really talking about here. But it's interesting that this chapter uses kind of like some heroic words or epic words or words that are even about a warrior. Kind of like words that are about a warrior. So for example, verse 10, woman of valor, or the virtuous wife, is the same expression in Judges 6:12 where it says mighty man of valor. It's the same expression. Verse 17, strength is used for powerful deeds and heroics in other scriptures. And there's some examples if you want to take them down. Exodus 15, verse 2, 1 Samuel 2, verse 10, where it's using the word strength for powerful deeds and heroics. Verse 11, the word gain. She will have no lack of gain. The word gain there is actually a word for plunder in other places. The word food in verse 15 for prey. Verse 19, the expression she holds is often used in military settings. And an example is Judges 5:26. Verse 29, surpass them all is sometimes used to signify victory. So these are examples of heroic, epic, champion type images. And over in the book, there's a book called How to Read Proverbs by Tremper Longman, T-R-E-M-P-E-R-L-O-N-G-M-A-N. And he has this quote about it. He says, perhaps life's struggles here are envisioned as a war, and the woman as an active and successful participant in taming life's chaos. I don't know about you, but Mary and I have had a good week of chaos, you know. So here we are reading about how the Church of God, if you want to apply that to the virtuous woman, virtuous wife, virtuous church, she's not a wimp. She is a heroic, epic character. The NIV translation, New International Version, calls her a wife of noble character instead of a virtuous woman. She's a wife of noble character. And Proverbs 12, verse 4, if you want to hold your place, but go over there. Proverbs 12, verse 4 says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. And the NIV, I think, says, a noble wife there as well. So they like the word noble. And the church is kind of noble and, you know, royal and all this because of marrying Christ. Verse 30, it says, her husband, Jesus Christ, is going to praise her because she is a, quote, woman who fears the Lord. So it's not for any deceitful charm. It's not for passing beauty. And I think, passing beauty, Peyton Manning, right? Now that's a different kind of beauty. But this woman is going to be praised for her strong character. And that's what all of us are here about. Is Proverbs 31 can help us to increase in character. Now, a lot of the commentaries point out, rightly so, that Proverbs 31 is not intended to be a numbered checklist of female righteousness. And you'll see things in there that, you know, might be not be intended that you've got to fulfill it literally, necessarily. Like, you might not have servants in this life. This lady was managing servants. So just because you might not be that wealthy and get to do that in this life, don't feel bad about that. When you have some kind of a profit, and that's getting difficult these days, it might not be from having a vineyard or becoming starting a garment business like this lady sounds like she's doing. But Proverbs 31 teaches us that the fear of God will inspire us to be faithful stewards of the talents and the abilities and the ones that God has given us to develop. And you'll see that this woman in Proverbs 31, she takes the initiative. She's out buying this, considering the field and buying it. She's doing all of these things. It looks like it's on her own. She's taking the initiative to do it. Well, look at the opportunities in the church now. There is room for initiative right now. And all of us have talents and abilities that God has given us. And the church is crying out for you to look at yourself and look at the talents that God has given you and see the opportunities and the needs that are there and to step up and do something about it. And we can see this every day now. And we can see it in our local church here as well. I'm not going to say something that I know because I'm not sure it's totally well known by everybody, but I know that there's going to be some opportunities coming up here in our local church real soon because of somebody moving away, of a family moving away. There's going to be some huge holes to fill. So there's opportunities right now here locally and in the church worldwide. Here we have the Lockwoods and the Cortices over in Malawi doing things this very day because they seized the opportunity that was there. And even our local church now is trying to establish a very close relationship with Malawi as a sister church and wanting as many as possible to try to figure out how to go be a part of that. So it's a worldwide opportunity open right now. This lady in this Proverbs 31 did not bury her talents. Remember how Christ told the fearful man that he should have at least put the talent that he had in the bank. Well, today he gets 0.005 interest, you know. Seems like a paltry waste of time. But Christ said at the very least he should have done that. And you remember, you've gone through those parables before. There's essentially about three of them, and one of them says you're going to be judged for your natural talents, how you've used them. You're going to be judged for the time you've had, and you're going to be judged for the effort you've put into it. So that's something for us to think about. This lady had boundless energy and diligence. And, you know, it talks in the one place about how her lamp doesn't go out at night and how she's up in the morning before her household doing things. Well, it sounds like she's sleep deprived, but you know, she is just very diligent, and all of us know that we need to be that way as well. Verse 27 says, she does not eat the bread of idleness. And one of the other translations says, she has nothing at all to do with laziness. So, you know, as you and I age, a lot of us aging, we get tired, we get aches and pains. As one said, what doesn't ache doesn't work. You know, and we're just finding, you know, we're finding that we have to motivate ourselves. We have to kick ourselves into gear when we might like to just sit and take it easy. But this lady had nothing to do with laziness. Verse 17, she girds herself with strength and she strengthens her arms. She is, at least in these verses, she's working on her own health and her own strength and keeping herself in shape so she can do all these things. Of course, we know the Bible says that exercise profits a little. So all of us can take some heart from that to work on keeping ourselves fit. Wisdom is one of the huge themes of this Proverbs 31 woman. Expositors go so far to say that this is more about the ideal of wisdom than about the ideal wife. So again, something that we can all learn from, men and women. And it contrasts with Dame Folly that was earlier in the Proverbs. You know, avoid this woman. Here's the one you want to be like. It says that wisdom is worth more than gold. And verse 2 says this lady is worth more than, she's far above rubies. We know that James 1:17 says there is a wisdom from above and it describes it. So you might want to write that down and study that. James 1 verse 5 says that we need to ask God for wisdom, and He's not going to be, you know, upgrade about it. He's eager to give you plenty of it. And I've heard it said before, and I think it's true, that we should ask God for the wisdom that we need in the challenges and the opportunities that we face. You know, whatever you've got that you're working on, ask God for wisdom to handle that. And of course, the whole book of Proverbs is to teach wisdom and instruction. So this is a primary little section about how to be wise. A third major part is about kindness. Kindness. And you'll notice in verse 26 that she opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. So it's a law to be kind. It's not just a good idea. And we remember Mr. Suckling was talking about words like that, kindness, love. It can be kind of hazy. But kindness is something that we can figure out, and we kind of intuitively know, you know, what it means to be kind. Those of you who were at the funeral of Larry Jansen, just person after person praised him as being a man of kindness. He was noted for his generosity and his kindness by person after person. And we all saw that in him. Galatians 5:25 lists kindness as being one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit, which, again, Pentecost, we're going to be picturing the Holy Spirit and the power of it and how we need to put on the character of God using that. It's not something we work up on our own. It's through the power of the Holy Spirit. And you know what's kind of interesting, I thought, was in when it's listing the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5:25, kindness is listed right after long-suffering. Right after long-suffering. And it's interesting, again, how the Bible is like this puzzle. You put it together. 1 Corinthians 13:4. Love suffers long and is kind. So in those two places, kindness comes after suffering long. How do you get to be kind? Because probably you have suffered long and you have felt the pain that the other person is feeling. And you can walk in his shoes because, well, you have. You've walked somewhat in his shoes. And you know that if you were in his shoes, you'd probably smell like his feet do too. You know, so you can put up with that. So you've learned to be kind because you've suffered long. So if you are feeling unkind towards somebody, it may well be that you have not suffered enough. Sounds like you've not suffered enough. There was an interesting article on Colin Powell, our former Secretary of State, in the latest Parade magazine and our Sunday Pueblo Chieftain. And I'm going to cut right to the core here. he's talking about kindness works. It's called Kindness Works. And he talks about a sermon that he heard over 40 years ago. So it's like me. This was 38 years ago. Here's a sermon he heard 40 years ago, and I'm going to just quote from it, what Colin Powell says. On his last Sunday, he was assigned the sermon. This was a particular man. As he finished, he looked out over the congregation and with a smile on his face, quietly concluded, "Always show more kindness than seems necessary, because the person receiving it needs it more than you will ever know." Colin Powell says, that sentence hit me with a special force that has remained with me for four decades. His lesson was clear. Kindness is not just about being nice. It's about recognizing another human being who deserves care and respect. So I'll read that again. Kindness is not just about being nice. It's about recognizing another human being who deserves care and respect. And again, he says, you can never err by treating everyone in the building with respect, thoughtfulness, and a kind word. So Colin Powell really had kindness impressed upon him. And shouldn't we? Because Romans 12:10. Let's take a look over there. Romans 12:10. This is the Christian Living chapter. And it says, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. How do you do that? In honor, giving preference to one another. So there's the key to how to be kind. In honor, give preference to one another. And that's what Colin Powell was saying virtually. Another one just like it, Philippians 2:3. Let's turn over there. Philippians 2:3 says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. So these three passages, the Romans, Philippians, Colin Powell, they all say the same thing. To show kindness because of the value you put on the other person and not on yourself. It's interesting that the division of the 12 tribes of Israel, what caused that? What occurred that made the 12 tribes of Israel divide? Let's go over there and look, because it's really intriguing. I think I'm throwing that out. It surprised me to see that this one thing was what resulted in that division. I mean, there are a lot of things, but let's go over to 2 Chronicles 10, verse 7. And this is where Rehoboam had his old advisors, his old, mature, experienced advisors. And then he also consulted with the young, impetuous men. And the elder advisors said to him, if you, in verse 7 of chapter 10 of 2 Chronicles, if you are kind to these people, and you please them, and you speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever. Then he went and consulted with the young guys, and they said, hey, Solomon gave them whips. You scourge them with scorpions. Forget the whips. Do it with scorpions. So the whole division happened right there, and it was a matter of kindness versus whipping them with scorpions. So it looks like the division actually came at the moment of, will you be kind or will you not? This Proverbs 31 woman, in addition to these major themes I've given you about virtuousness or strength of character, and then we talked about wisdom, and then we talked about kindness now, and then there's another broad look you can make about husband, family, community, and world. Or if you're a woman, yeah, it'd be husband, family. If you're a man, it could be, you know, your wife, your family, community, world. This lady in Proverbs 31 had that all together. So we'll look at that from that standpoint as well. Verse 11, the heart of her husband safely trusts in her. Wouldn't we love that to be said about the church of God by our husband, Jesus Christ, that he safely trusts in us? The church as a whole and each one of us individually. Matthew Henry, concise commentary, says she can be trusted, and he, in this case Christ, will leave such a wife to manage for him. She makes it her constant business to do him good. So he doesn't have to be a micromanager like my boss is. He's one of the worst micromanagers, but he's gotten better at it. But that was one problem he really had to work on. He did not always trust you in the little smallest of details. But this woman, look at the things she's doing, because she has the complete trust of her husband. I mentioned to you already about Proverbs 31 being an acrostic. And that means, you know, it was by someone who was a good writer that knew enough to do one. You know, like if you were to do a haiku or a limerick or something like that, you show a little bit of skill as a writer. Well, this Proverbs 31 actually has some more examples in it that show that the person who wrote this was a really good writer. I don't want to go into it in too much detail, but I'll go into it a little bit. They call it a chiastic structure, and the only thing I'm going to say about that is verse 23 is one example of this chiastic structure, where this verse in 23 kind of becomes the focal point of the whole chapter, if you want to look at it that way. The New American Commentary says, all the other verses praise the wife, but this verse alone focuses on the esteem the husband commands. Far from being an intrusion, however, verse 23 actually establishes the central message of the poem. This woman is the kind of wife a man needs in order to be successful in life. Remember we said, this is about, hey, young man, here's the gal that you want to find. This is what she'd be like. Indeed, the concentric arrangement of the noble wife's characteristics around this verse may be an allusion to her serving as the husband's encircling crown. In chapter 12, verse 4, it talked about the wife being the crown of her husband. So those who study literature say that the way this is all centered around verse 23 is like the crown centering around the husband. So there you go. Remember Scott talked about he only wants to know so much about literature, and then it overwhelms him. So I don't know how much you want to know. I don't want to overwhelm you. But there's another one too. There's another one, a chiasmic, concentric thing going on too. And this revolves around verses 19 and 20. So in verses 19 and 20, we have, she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, yet she reaches out her hands to the needy. So this is another one of these ones where the whole chapter revolves around these two verses as well, in that the New International Commentary on the Old Testament says, verse 19 concludes the first part of the poem, showing her worth and efforts, while verse 20 opens the next section, showing the results of her character. So the two verses specifically illustrate the point that her activities, that is the work with her hands, in verse 19, are in fact done to benefit others, in verse 20. So it's interesting. Again, she's taking her talents, she's taking what God has given her, and she's going to use it to help her husband, the community. And in here, they don't have so much of a worldview, it seems. But for us today, a worldview. We can stretch it out that far. This woman's family is well taken care of. In verse 27, it says she watches over the ways of her household. So again, these are what we want to do as well. We want to reach out, it's not just ourselves and God, you know, me and you, Lord. It's our families, it's our church, it's the work, it's the whole world today that we're trying to serve. And as we know, we have a worldwide commission. Our view is worldwide. Okay, there's another major theme in this Proverbs 31, and that is no fear. No fear. Look at verse 21. She is not afraid of snow. Hey, we're not either. We don't get any. Okay, a little joke there. Thankfully, we do get a little, but not enough. But this woman is not afraid of snow, and it says it's because she's making her, you know, everyone is clothed in wonderful warm clothes and everything. Verse 25 says, she shall rejoice in time to come. The NIV says, she can laugh at days to come. She can laugh at them. She has no fear. And I thought, you know, this is really helpful for us, some of the many parts of the Bible that talk about we live by faith, we don't live by fear. And we have to always fight that, though. That's easy to say. It's very hard to live, as we all know. I've had some fear in the last week, you know, with some things that have gone on. And I just have to keep saying, we do not live by fear, we live by faith. This woman did. 1 John 4:18 says, perfect love casts out all fear. So, you know, we know that we're trying to live by the perfect love of God. And if so, we'll have no fear. But how do we ever live up to that as human beings? You know, it's too easy to fear. Well, this is Schubert, or Schubert, however you pronounce it. You know, he's famous for his Unfinished Symphony. I'm obviously not famous for mine. And I'm not even going to work on it anymore. But this sermon will be finished soon, and it's about the Proverbs 31 church. Not just the Proverbs 31 woman, the Proverbs 31 wife, but the Proverbs 31 church. I didn't go through this verse by verse, but we all can, and we can learn some from these very helpful themes that are in here about diligence and character. She's helping the poor. She's looking after her family. She's got all of these wonderful things going her way. I wanted to just turn over on a verse that can help us where we are becoming the wife of Jesus Christ. Let's look over to Philippians 1, verse 6. Philippians 1, verse 6. And Paul said here, being confident of this very thing, that he, God, who has begun a good work in you, will complete it. He will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. So he's not going to be like Schubert, have an unfinished symphony. I don't think God does not, there's nothing that he does not finish. He's not going to have an unfinished anything. His glorious wife is going to be without wrinkle and spot. She's going to be ready to marry Jesus Christ. And you might feel that you're going to pot, but your potter says no. He's going to finish you as a beautiful pot. Paul said that he finished his course, and a crown was laid up for him. So God is going to help each one of us and the church, but each one of us is part of the church. He's going to help us to finish. So Jesus Christ does not unfinish anything. Take heart in that.